Welcome to the Confident ROI radio show. This is Alex Vorobieth, and I'm excited today. We got a great guest. He is going to help you find the white tiger. He's been finding white tigers all over the world, starting with his place of birth in Lebanon. And he was born in Lebanon before the war started. And he was able to not only survive, but thrive with the skill he learned of finding the white tiger. And he's done it throughout his life on multiple continents. And he's written a book, Finding the White Tiger. And his name is Tony Asali. And Tony, welcome to the Confident ROI Show.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
It's great to have you on. We've been talking here beforehand and getting to know each other. And, you know, let's start. You had to start out twice in life, essentially. I've been reading your book, and you talk about growing up in Lebanon before the war, when it was the Paris of the Middle East, and you were working really hard. You're working two jobs. And I love the reason why you were working two jobs as a young kid. Why were you working two jobs, Tony?
Because I wanted to buy an American car, which was very rare. And I love to work because I love the opportunities. So I was working as a night auditor in the hotel, and they chose me 6 months before I graduated from the hotel school. And in the daytime, I was working in an exclusive men's store. And one day, I was reading the magazine and I saw Wrangler jeans, that we did not have jeans in Lebanon at that time. Mm-hmm. So I asked my dad to give me a broker number in America, in New York. So he did a couple of days later, and I called this gentleman and I made a deal. And I brought the Wrangler jeans to Lebanon, and I asked the owner of the clothing store if I can share profit with him if I displayed the Wrangler jeans in his store. So they flew out of the shelf. We couldn't get enough of them. And I kept reordering and reordering. And my little tiger started to grow and grow and grow. So that was my first real white tiger, by bringing the Wrangler jeans to Lebanon.
That is amazing. And so that was what, in the 60s?
In the 60s, and yeah, I was like 16 years old.
Right. And so Tony went on, just for our audience, he ended up leaving Lebanon when the war broke out. His father wanted him to leave and to come back, or to bring him over, his father, his parents over once the war ended, but potentially to go back after the war. But the war went on for decades. And Tony came to the U.S. and he built multiple businesses using this theory of the white tiger, and he's built them successfully. Tony, what is the theory of the white tiger?
The theory of the white tiger is to seize on an opportunity that nobody sees or recognizes, just like the white tiger is very unique and special. And when you seize that opportunity that nobody else sees, and you go for it, and you listen to your creative side, and you silence your inner critics, and be bold and don't be afraid, and go for it and make it a success. And I did seize on a lot of white tigers throughout my careers, and I went for them, wasn't afraid, and I just got that rare opportunity, and I made it into a success every time.
And you know, that sounds similar, Tony. They've done research on people, and it boils down to their view on life, whether they're lucky or not. And they ask people, you know, do you think you're lucky? And they found, they would ask people that, and the ones that did find themselves lucky, they, for regardless of how they responded, they would put a dollar like on the floor, maybe on the way out, and they'd ask people questions, and one of them was, do you feel lucky? The people who answered, hey, I feel lucky, they were more likely to see the dollar bill on the floor and pick it up.
Now, I don't think it was just luck. Yeah. When in life, you do everything that you meant to do, and you help others, and you take chances. It's just like the whole universe actually conspires and give you everything you need to succeed. So
if you're looking for it and willing to grab it, once
you have to look for it and seize that opportunity. That's what I call the white tiger.
Yeah, because
catching that white tiger.
Because Wrangler jeans were available. They were in magazines. Maybe not everyone saw them, but you saw an opportunity there, and you grabbed it with both hands.
Yes.
Tony, tell us, what did you feel when your dad said you should leave Lebanon? You know, the war is breaking out. He got you a visa to leave. What did you feel when?
I felt happy and sad. I felt sad about leaving the country that all my friends, my relatives, my family, which I'm the oldest, and I felt like a little responsible for my family. But I always heard about America and the opportunity and the freedom and the people. And I really wanted to come. So I was kind of happy that my dad was able to get me a visa.
Mm-hmm.
And I was not afraid. And I know I'm going to make it, even though I only had $28 in my pocket when I arrived to America. That's all I had. But I wasn't worried or afraid because of the white tigers. I know I'm going to seize on it and build on it and make it success. And once I settled, my main focus was to bring my parents over here. That was my main focus. That's why I wanted to work hard and save money and bring my parents over. So I was kind of excited. But in the meantime, when I get on an airplane, that's when I realized I was it. I have to leave everything behind that I knew, everybody. But my dad, I respected my dad's decision.
And how old were you?
17.
17.
Yes.
Wow. And so can you tell us about one of the first white tigers you found in the United States?
Oh, the first white tiger was, after being in the United States for a couple months, I met this girl and I asked her to take me to a fancy restaurant. And when we got there, I wanted to impress her. So I asked the waiter if I can get a sommelier. And he said, "Sommelier what?" I said, "Oh, sorry, I meant the wine steward." He said, "Oh, we don't have any of those." Right away, I seized on my first white tiger in the United States. And the next day, I went to the general manager and I convinced him that I should be that wine steward in a fancy restaurant like this. And I will make 15% on every bottle of wine that I sell. And it took some convincing, but I got him to buy me the red jacket and the chain that have the key, the medallion, and the tasting cup. And after 4 months, I ran out of wine. I sold every bottle of wine. And when the minimum wage was 80 cents an hour, I was taking home about $500 to $600. But that was my first white tiger. But during my selling wine in the evening, there was this coffee cart that is sitting in the corner. And when the client asked the waiter for a cup of coffee, they used to go there and make the cup over there and add little whipped cream to it. And when I ran out of wine and I found out it takes 6 to 8 weeks to get it, I went back to the general manager and I convinced him if I can sell Irish coffee. And that was my second white tiger that I saw, because that car had been sitting there for years and years and years and nobody have seized on it. Nobody caught it, but I did. And I asked the manager if we add a shot of Irish whiskey to it and sell a cup for $3 instead of $2 that I would pay them, but I would sell it to the client for $5, and that's the $2 are my money. So I was selling, they used to sell 2-3 cups a night. I was selling 70 to 80 cups a night. So I was making a lot of money. That was my second White Tiger.
That's really impressive. I mean, to go to first find one White Tiger, but to be so successful, the Tiger had nothing left to, there was nothing left to sell, but then to find something there that people, I would assume like the waiters thought you were going to be successful at that.
Yes. And during, I'm doing the Irish coffee, there was this photographer. I realized that this gentleman keep taking my picture. And I did not know. I thought he was immigration or something, but I wasn't worried. I had my legal papers. I wasn't hiding anything. But I realized after that they were putting my picture making Irish coffee in the flyer that the Sheraton Corporation sent it all over the world with my picture on it in the center of the flyer. So he was 17 years old kid with his picture on the Sheraton flyer going all over the world making Irish coffee. That was very exciting for me.
Well, you probably also had a claim on royalties on the your image there, right? Did they make the coffee maker, or was it
who? No, they demanded to put a coffee cart in all the restaurants.
Okay.
All because right. of me.
Wow. Yeah, that is a, you not only caught your White Tiger, they made you into a White Tiger.
Yes.
That's really impressive. And so you're doing well, you're making multiples of wages, you're probably being able to save up. So did you decide you wanted to get into business, or and what move, how did you move that from there? Because a lot of times people are finding a White Tiger and they're fine to just stay there with it forever.
No, I did send a lot of money to my family in Lebanon. Mm-hmm. Because during that war, I know there was a lot of stress, and sure. I'm sure my dad was not working. And so my main focus was to send a lot of money over there before I even eat. I mean, that was my main thing. I've always had the tendency to give. I love to give because I know it's going to come back to me. And you need to help others in life and it will come back to you. So, and then my third White Tiger was I introduced the Whig parties to the homes in America, and I was making a lot of money selling wigs.
Wigs, like for your hair?
Yes.
Hair. Okay. Because yes. Wig party. So
I had a friend that is a hairdresser, and he was selling 2 wigs a week. So I convinced him to put an ad in the paper because that was my third White Tiger, and start to doing wig parties at home and selling 10 wigs to the lady that that entertained the party in her house. If we sold 10 wigs, we'll give her one free. So all these ladies were doing parties right and left every night. We were so busy working 7 days constantly, but the money was great.
So how did you even spot this White Tiger? You're probably not wearing a wig. You're a young single guy at the time, I would assume. How did you tap into this?
I wanted to sell more. I always want to do more. I created the word more. I wanted to sell more than 2 wigs a week. And that idea right away came to my head. That let's have a wig parties instead of going door to door. Let this lady invite her friends and we sell 10 wigs. We give her one free. Every woman wanted a wig free at that time. The wigs were found out, they were very popular. And if they weren't very much, we made them popular.
And why do you think the wig party, why do you think the women liked it?
Because sometimes they didn't feel like taking a shower in the morning and they don't feel like fixing their hair. And they put on the wig that's already teased. Because my friend is a hairdresser, so it always looks nice. So it's convenient and they can change color of their hair or whatever the reason was, but we sold it.
Was there anything between the Wrangler jeans to selling wine to selling the Irish whiskey to the wigs? Was there a common denominator? Was it how you presented it to people? Is there anything special in terms of how you presented things?
I have to believe in the product first. I want to make sure that it's a good product, mm-hmm. and the service that people will want. And I just, we have opportunity and I catch it. And I really, really, really go for it. And I present it as the way I present it. It does not matter what product it is, as long as I believe in it and gives people the need for it. And I provided that need, but I provided and I succeeded on it because I've always had the ability to seize on the rare opportunities, and I make a success to it. And I can go on and on and on, way beyond.
Yeah, no, that, it. And so you're doing the wig parties. You're moving more into working for yourself. I understand you got into the hummus business. Is that hummus business before it was a well-known product here in the United States? Is that fair?
Yes. It wasn't well-known at all because when I was giving samples in the supermarkets on weekend when we first started, clients were coming to me and say, "Sonny, how come your yogurt is yellow?"
Well, let's get the whole story on how Tony Asali brought hummus to America before it even knew what it was. And let's just take a quick break here and we'll be right back.
There is a magazine that accompanies this show. So if you want to stay up to date on the latest ideas and trends, you don't have to just tune in every week. You can turn on to the new magazine that accompanies it, Confident ROI. Discover the right tool to improve your company and read articles like the one in the latest issue from Vern Harnish, the famous Vern Harnish on strategy, or Top Grading with Dr. Brad Smart. There's even a cure for your hiring headache in there, and even information on systems like the EOS system that we've talked about so many others times here on this show and others. All of that and more, you can read confidently to find out real-life tools to improve your company and take it to the next level. Just go find it. It's free. That's right. The four-letter word, F-R-E-E, at confidentroi.com. Just like it sounds, confident, R-O-I.
And we're back on the Confident ROI show with our guest, Tony Asali. Tony Asali. Did I get it, Tony?
Yes.
All right.
You did.
All right. Because I got a last name,
thank
too.
You. Right?
Of course, for me, I accept all pronunciations. Whenever anyone says a pronunciation, I always say, "Yeah, that's about it, right?" And the only place they actually, the only place they get it right is Paris. It's one of the few places they do it quite well. But anyways, we were talking before the break about hummus and you introducing hummus before it was everywhere, before it was in Trader Joe's and that people knew what it was. And you were talking about, they were asking you, why are you selling yellow yogurt? So how did you convince America to buy yellow yogurt?
Okay. So when after the church, we went down to the basement one Sunday. And we were talking about in the supermarket, there is French food, Mexican food, Chinese food, Japanese food, et cetera, et cetera. But there is no Mediterranean foods.
And when is this, Tony? What
round? 1980.
1980. Okay. All right.
So right away, I seized on my fifth tiger. And Monday morning, I went to the printing shop and I ordered label and I called my company Cedars Mediterranean foods. That's after the cedars of Lebanon. It's on our flag. And that company is still running now under Cedars Mediterranean Food, if you Google it back in the East Coast, in New England, in Boston. And I bought small La Machine mixer, and I start making it at home. And that's all I can fit in my refrigerator, 48 8-ounce containers. And the next morning, I took them to like health food store and small independent store to test. I said, can I put this on the shelf? Whatever you don't sell in a week, I take it and replace it for you, so you only pay me for whatever you sold. I had to make it easy for them to let me try. They never heard of this product. So I put on the shelf four stores, 12 pieces each. So I went back 3 days to check on it. The first two stores, I didn't find any product. So I was nervous. I said, oh my God, they put it in the back. They want to kick me out. They want me to take it all back. So I went to the manager. I said, I'm so glad to see you. Do you have any more product? We sold out. So that really encouraged me. And for 3 months, I got lucky. There was a hairdresser that went out of business across the street from my house because I couldn't keep making it at my house.
Well, you can only make 48 at a time, right?
That's right. That's all I can put in the refrigerator.
That is limited capacity.
Yeah, my wife was yelling at me because she needs to put food there. So a hairdresser went out of business, so I asked the landlord if I can have it. He let me have it for $300 a month.
And I went That's a lot of money. That's a lot of hummus.
So at that time, yes. And then 6 months later, I approached the big supermarkets. The first one was the Moulos Market, and they let me, and he gave me 40 stores. And I almost passed out when I heard that. How am I going to supply him?
Going to need a bigger refrigerator.
I asked for a month. So he let me take a month to prepare. So I bought a van and prepared. And after that, I went from supermarket to another. Then I went from Massachusetts to Rhode Island to Connecticut to Pennsylvania and to New York. I arrived at New York and I found a great distributor there. We were sending our driver 3 times to New York. And then I wanted to come and visit my sister in California 4 years later, 1984, on my birthday in April. And I saw the weather and I said, oh my God, what am I doing in Boston? So I said, before I make a move, I went check Ralph, Alpha Beta, Lucky. I did not see hummus in there. And that made up my mind. So I went back, I sold my share.
So you went back because there was nothing, because there was no, you didn't look at it as, well, they don't even, this product isn't even here. You looked at it as total opportunity that there was nothing on the shelf, even if you had to convince, start all over convincing people.
Start all over. Start all over. I sold my share and I moved here and I drove across country. That was the best thing that I ever did. Me and my son, I was one parent. We drove from east to west in 10 days. And I went and bought another small La Machine. Start to do it at home again, 48 containers in the refrigerator and selling to health food stores. And I wanted to try LA a little bit, which I did not know which freeway to take. Finally,
well,
I took
Johnny Carson could help you out at the time, right? You take the Slauson cutoff and the 10.
Yeah, I did not know what exit to take. I took Santa Monica exit. And then what store do I go to? And then I saw a milk truck at 4:30 in the morning. I followed the milk truck. I figured he have to deliver his milk to stores. That's how I found stores in LA. And I asked him to take my product. And I convinced him, actually. And I started in LA. And then
Can you remember one that was tough to convince? Any stories?
Yes, he said, we don't have room on the shelf and we never heard of this. What is this? So I had to explain what the tahini is, which is sesame seed oil and the garbanzo and its protein. And he said, no, we don't have room on the shelf. But I said, look, what you got to lose? Just give me 1 week tryout. Whatever you do, I come back in a week. Whatever's on the shelf that didn't sell, I'll take it and you only pay me for whatever you sold. Just 1 week. Please let me try it. I'm building my route here. Other stores took it, and you should take it too, because you don't want the clients to go to that store to pick up that product and start buying everything else from there if you don't have.
You kind of scared them a little bit. They wouldn't have the product.
I had to scare them. And they allowed me. And again, God was with me. 2-3 days later, I came back to check on the product. And they were asking me if I had any more product in the van too.
And how do you think you got, was it your labeling? How did you get people to pick up the product?
Sampling. I stood there and gave samples of pita bread and let people taste it. After I put the product, I stood there and let people taste the item, and they all liked it. Some of them didn't understand it, but I had to explain it. I mean, I'm making it sound easy when I'm talking, but it was a lot of hard work, very difficult, but I'm not afraid of challenge. I always conquer it and win. Always, no matter what the challenge is.
Now, was sampling common back then, or was that something new?
I didn't see anybody sampling. I mean, at that time, they didn't have sampling as much as they have in Costco and Sam's
Club. Yeah. Now, it wasn't as formal.
Any store I went to, there was never any sampling, even a supermarket. Mm-hmm. We like Alpha Beta and Lucky at that time. Now they don't no longer exist. Estate of Brothers, Ralph, Vaughn's. And one day I saw Trader Joe. I didn't even know how many Trader Joe are. I walked in there. I asked the manager if I can put my product on the shelf. He said, no. You have to call corporate office. When they tell you have to call the corporate office, that means they have more than one store. I said, well, how many do you have? He said, 40. And I almost died when he said 40. I said, can you please give me the phone number so I can call him? I called him. I made an appointment, made a sample, and he told me to come back in 30 days. And every day was longer and longer for me. Couldn't go by fast enough to call Trader Joe so I can get those 40 supermarkets. And then when I called him, he said, yes, we do want to take your product. Come down so we can figure it out. And man, I almost passed out on the phone. I couldn't. That was the happiest day of my life. It was awesome that I did it out west. And then I connected east and west and sold it again.
What do you mean by that?
I was sending product all the way, and they were sending product here. So I even was managed to send some of the product beside the hummus tahini, like baklava.
Oh, sure. With the butter?
Yes. I filled up all health food stores from east to west. Because
you filled up health food stores with baklava?
Yeah, because...
I've made baklava. I don't know how healthy it is.
Yes. You made it with white filo dough. I'm the only one that made it with whole wheat filo dough. I created the whole wheat filo dough on baklava. That's why I was able to sell it to health food markets.
With all the butter and the sugar, and it's health food. It's better than a Snickers bar, but
but because it was whole wheat filo dough.
All right. But so you're sending stuff east to west. How many people are working in these in your companies now?
In my company, I had like 25. Production, and I was the only marketing guy, and I had 5 vans delivering. But we found distributors that they go cross country.
Sure. But growing that fast, what were some of the headaches you endured, or some of the things you had to overcome? I mean, it's one thing to get the orders, another thing to deliver them consistently. And
yes, we were running. Thank you for asking. We were running 24-hour shift after a while. And then I started to make different product beside the hummus tahini, because I was told in Southern California, you have to make salsa.
Okay. So you have to. It's the
you
law.
You have to make salsa. And I did very unique salsa. If you don't mind, you want me to tell you about it?
Was this a white tiger?
Yes. Yeah, another white tiger that nobody had or nobody did it, even the salsa, the way I did it.
Right.
They invited me, the one that I used to buy my boxes from, invited me to El Ranchito Mexican restaurant.
Sure, I know El Ranchito well.
Yeah. And he said, Tony, you have to try the Corona beer. They do put a lime in it. I said, lime in the beer? Well, I'll try it. I mean, I tried it, and then I saw another white tiger. I looked at that beer, and I saw the crown, and I said to myself, if I turn the crown upside down and put my salsa in the beer mug and sell it in the liquor department instead of the deli department right next to Corona beer, and I called it Corona Salsa, that would fly out. And we couldn't make enough 24 hours putting salsa in the beer mug. So people were buying my salsa, Corona Salsa, and keep the beer mug because I turned the crown on the Corona beer upside down. And I called it Corona Salsa.
And did you get a call from the Corona lawyers?
3 years later, they wanted royalty, and I already made a lot of money with it. And I said, I'm not going to do it anymore. I'm not going to pay you anything. So we were done.
That was probably a lucrative white tiger.
It was very, very lucrative. And then we did other items. Can I tell you one more?
Sure.
I took the Vons buyers to play golf. I wanted to treat them. And on the ninth hole.
Now, were you a golfer?
Yes.
You were a golfer. Okay.
Yes. Well, I had to learn.
Did you like it?
Okay. I found a lot of wasting my time, but I had to use it for entertainment. See, I'm a worker. I'm a workaholic. I work all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, okay. I'm sorry. But this, I love it.
I'm just legally separated from golf, so I didn't really see you as a golfer. I kind of assumed you were golfing for business sake. So you take the Vons golf, the Vons buyer.
And I won trophies, though. I did win a couple trophies. You believe it or not?
Because you're a winner.
Thank you. And on the ninth hole, there is a little food stand that you buy hot dogs. So. I asked them, they said yes. I bought them hot dogs, and we asked where the condiments are, the ketchup, mustard, onion, and relish. He said, outside on the table. We went outside, and I saw flies all over the ketchup, the mustard.
Yeah.
And then I saw another white tiger, and I seized on it very quick. I said to myself, if I get a squeezable plastic bottle, and I put the ketchup, mustard, onion, and relish in one bottle, squeezable bottle, and make it clean and sell it everywhere and call it the Grand Slam because it's four products. Like the baseball, the Grand Slam is four points.
Sure.
We couldn't make enough. I put that bottle of Grand Slam next to every single hot dog display in all the supermarkets. And another 24 hours shift running that. Yes, it was amazing, very clean. And then I did one more item too. I mean, I realized that coleslaw with the mayonnaise is a very fattening item and a lot of cholesterol. So I figured if I take the mayonnaise out and put apple juice concentrate and send it to the lab and make it zero cholesterol,
So you got rid of the mayonnaise and you put in apple juice. So did you
concentrate?
And so that's not going to be kind of white though. How did you try to get the texture to the coleslaw or?
Yes, we tried to get the texture and we called it slim slaw.
Slim slaw.
Yes. And we sold it to Vons with 10-pound buckets to display on the deli right next to the potato salad and egg salad. And Pavilion was selling it like there is no tomorrow advance. And they were selling it for $2.99 a pound and it was flying off the shelf. I had to order a machine from Germany just for the cabbage, and Camarillo farmers could not produce enough cabbage for me.
There's a cabbage shortage.
I bought it all.
But cornered the cabbage market. So you're coming up with all these great products. What was your biggest challenge in delivering them?
There was no challenge because I found distributors that would take the product.
But even just making it, how did you go and sell it, and then there'd be the bigger demand than you can meet? Was it people? Was it capital?
Kept hiring more people, and the money was good. I was paying them. They're very loyal. I had a production manager, and I had a control manager, and my product were kosher, and the rabbi was coming at all time checking how clean we were.
How did you find the right production manager and the right key people? Was that?
Again, let me share with you how I found them.
Yeah, good.
When you do everything right, what you meant to do, the universe conspires and actually conspires and give you everything you need to succeed. I was watching my son's baseball game, and this gentleman came and sat next to me. I don't know where, there was tons of people there, but he's the one that sat next to me. And my son was doing good. I was cheering him up. His name is Scott. And then this gentleman said, "Oh, Scott Asali is your son." I said, "Yes." He said, "Well, my son goes to the same school and he plays baseball with your son." So I said, "Well, hi, my name is Tony. What do you do?" And he said, "I'm a baker." And I almost fell down because I'm looking for a baker to make the baklava. And this man out of nowhere came and sat next to me. So I made an offer for him that same minute. I gave him $100 more than what he was making a week to give his notice tomorrow morning, the next day. He was working for Panera Bread. Sorry, Panera. So, so that's how, and he became with me because I was just starting my business in California. And the most amazing thing, again, that the odds are 1 per 100 million. I saw a commercial building in Westminster, California, and I wanted to set it up like I had my factory back east. I opened the yellow page, and the first phone number under restaurant supply, I called that first number, and I asked the gentleman if he does that, if he give me blueprint so I can build stuff and get it approved by the health department, if he can meet me the next day at 10 a.m. So I took Danny with me, the baker, and we went.
So this is the restaurant supply guy?
Yeah.
Okay, so they had...
The first one. In the phone book. I don't know where.
Okay.
And the next day we met at 10 o'clock, and I'm telling the guy what I want. I want a built-in freezer that I can bring the pallet jack in with the pallets, and I want this, and I want that, and I want the floor to be 6 inches, linoleum, white, and all that. And then in the middle, what I'm telling him I want, he stopped, and I got a little nervous. I said, maybe I told him too much. I said, "Excuse me, why did you stop? Did I say anything?" He said, No. "Do you have half an hour?" I said, "Yes." He said, "Can you follow me to Tustin?" I said, "Danny, where's Tustin?" He said, "Well, it's only 20 minutes from here. It's no problem." I said, "Yes, I can follow you." So we went to Tustin on Red Hill and Walnut. And we went to like industrial commercial area. And he opened the door, and I saw a couple officers. And then we get to the back door, and he said, "Are you ready?" I said, "Yeah." And when he opened the back door and I entered, I almost passed out and fell on the floor. Danny held me. Whatever I told that man how I want my factory, it was right there ready with a license, health department license. This doesn't happen. And I said, "What happened to you? Why? This is amazing. I can start production tomorrow.
The universe is conspiring
for the health department."
The universe was conspiring.
Yes, and gave me everything I need to succeed.
So you envisioned this factory, and there it was.
There it was. And he said, I wanted to do sandwiches for 7-Eleven, and I worked on it for a year and a half. I went to Japan, got pans, got this, pizza ovens, this, that, everything I needed. And then for the finished product, my cost was 79 cents. 7-Eleven offered me 49 cents. And I had to stop. He never used that factory one day. It was waiting for me to take it. 7-Eleven offered 49 cents when his cost was 79 cents.
Okay. And so were you able?
He couldn't go forward.
So he built the factory before he found out the price.
Yes.
And so how did you make it work financially?
I said, because I'm just starting business, can I have 6 months free rent? So I said, yeah, of course, I've been paying all it for a year and a half. 6 months, not going to make any difference. And the next day, I started ordering the material, but I had the machines there. He even had the mixer. He had the pizza ovens. He had the racks. He had the walk-in freezer. What's the odds of, my gosh, I mean, I couldn't thank God enough. That was the first phone call I made from the yellow book, from the yellow phone book.
Wow. Well, let's take our last break, Tony, and then we'll kind of talk about lessons you've learned and what you can share with people who maybe haven't found their first white tiger or maybe found one or two, but you're quite good at spotting them and capturing them and writing them. So let's take one last break and then we'll come back and summarize it.
That's right, because we can't put off this final commercial anymore. It's coming right at you. That's the webinar that's coming up on September 18th at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 10 a.m. Pacific Time, a couple hours earlier in Hawaii. You can sign up for this webinar at confidentroi.com. And what will you hear? Well, they'll discuss how to uncover the hidden force pulling companies into dysfunction and creating frustration. Ouch. How to implement straightforward tools to identify and remove the real source of that pain. And they'll talk about and explore eliminating the most common behavior that keeps a company from becoming an unstoppable force. Powerful thoughts, interesting conversation. You can join in on this webinar, free webinar, September 18th, 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific. Simply sign up at confidentroi.com. And if you happen to hear it later, if you're listening to this as a podcast, you say, darn, I missed that thing. Hey, we'll record it. It'll be on confidentroi.com along with the rest of these shows and the magazine. Lots of stuff, lots of reasons to go there. Confidentroi.com.
And we're back with Confident ROI and Tony Asali. And we're not going to summarize here because Tony's got too many more good stories to tell. And so, Tony, you're telling me about you were a member of BNI, the networking group. And tell me about your experience in that group.
Okay, I decided to join BNI because I got invited as a visitor. And I did not know nothing about networking or BNI before. And I realized there was only one person for, you cannot have the same two jobs at BNI. You gotta be only one of each, one industry of each. So I thought I'm gonna get some business. And then after 6 months, I didn't get any business. And I realized that the reason probably I didn't get any business because I'm not giving any referrals and they don't trust me. They don't know me yet. So I started, if I didn't have any referrals, I was referring myself. So they were making money on me. So they started to trust me. So if I needed a painter, I got BNI painter. If I needed a health insurance, I buy from the guy at BNI health insurance or life insurance or financial advisor. So I was using everybody almost in there and paying money because I was using them even if I didn't need them to build my reputation and to build rapport with them. And little by little, once I start to give more, I started to get. But of course, I gave a lot more than what I get. So I joined 2010. By 2017, my record for the year, I gave out 986 referrals when the average person does maximum 150 a year. And I got thank you for closed business, $975,000. 2017, when the average person maximum gets 200,000 if they did good. So the art I created, like the art of getting, is giving. You have to give to get. And all my life, I've always gave and I always helped others, and some of them without even know that I helped them. So because of that, I send it my records to Dr. Ivan Meisner, the founder of BNI. And he decided, he was so excited. And I cannot be more thankful to him that he is endorsing my book. And he's writing the foreword for my book that is Catch the White Tiger, How I Achieved the American Dream with $28.
That is amazing, Tony. And it's just a succession of different, finding different opportunities and making the most of them, from identifying, hey, there's no Mediterranean food in the supermarket, to the next day going and starting to make it and making as much as you can, even though it wouldn't fill the shelves, and then getting people to try it. Tony, what would you, if someone's listening to this podcast and like, oh, Tony's just better at that, or he's more positive than me, or he was lucky, he came here with only $28, so he had to do that. What would you say to someone who's saying, well, that'll never work for me?
I would tell him, first of all, you have to believe in yourself and you have to trust your instinct. Do not be afraid. Spend more time listening to your creative side and silence your inner critics. And don't be afraid. You don't have nothing to lose. And try to look for the white tiger and seize on it. The white tiger is that rare opportunity that does exist, but people do not see it or recognize it. So if you start to look for it, you will find it, maybe not as much as me or every time, but you will find it. And if you help others and trust in yourself, your wealth will grow and grow beyond your imagination. So let's challenge those people, challenge the status quo, and keep looking to catch your white tiger. And that's all I can tell you, and you will succeed.
Go ahead.
Keep silencing your inner critics, because they want to stop you at all times. And spend more time listening to your creative side.
All right. And where can people get your book, Tony?
They can get it now, pre-order at TonyAssali.com. And it's going to come out in the fall. And we
of 2018?
Yes, in the fall 2018. Thank you, Alex.
No problem.
And it's going to be amazing. And I recommend everybody to hold that book in their hand, because it's going to change their life to the better. Because it kept changing my life. Everything I touched, I helped others, and I always had the best loyal employee, never had a turnover, nobody ever left me, because I take good care of them. So help others and take care of them, and it comes back to you.
And I hope you do an audio version of the book, because I think you recording it in your own voice will be wonderful. That would be a great...
I am. Thank you. And I got one more thing to share with you and the audience, if I may.
Yep.
As you remember, I mentioned to you my main focus when I came to America. I'm making that money to send it to my family, and I was saving here because my ultimate goal was to bring my family over. And 1975, I saw a news report that all civil war really, really, really started to happen. And we had a telephone. We were one of the few people in that area we lived in Beirut that we had a telephone at that time. I couldn't call anymore. I couldn't reach my parents. I wrote letters, did not get back. And that was my worst nightmare, thinking that I will never see my family again and they must be probably dead. Or I did not have no idea. Then I saw a white tiger and I seized on that white tiger. I took a pen and a piece of paper and I wrote, "Dear American Ambassador in Greece." Greece is about 45 minutes by airplane from from Beirut, Lebanon. You probably know that. So I wrote to the American Ambassador in Greece. I said, "My name is Tony Asali, and this is the name of my family, the passport number, and the date of birth. And I do not know if they are dead or alive. I only have God in heaven and you on earth, Mr. Ambassador. Please find them in Lebanon, bring them to Greece, put them in a hotel, and give them a tourist visa." I'm dictating to the guy what I want. Do you believe it? I'm dictating to that ambassador on a letter, of course, and give him a tourist visa so they can come to America. And once this war is over, they're going to go back. And I went and I put that letter in that blue box that's called mailbox. And I get the address from 411. At that time, we called the operator.
Yeah.
So that was in 1975. And in 1976, one night, the Platters came to Boston to Copley Square to perform live.
Right.
So I was so excited. See, I don't drink alcohol, but that night, I took this date and we went to see the Platters. I was so excited. I love the Platters. And they wanted to have a dancing contest on the floor. And would you know it, I won that contest. I won that dancing contest. And they offered me a bottle of Moët de Chandon champagne. And I don't drink, but I was too excited and happy that I won about 200 couples on there. So I popped it and started drinking a little bit, me and the girl. And I was getting a little tipsy. To be honest with you, I do not know how I got home. Up to today, I don't remember how, but I made it. Thank God I made it home safe. So at 4 o'clock, I went to bed about 2 o'clock, passed out. I know I passed out. But at 4 o'clock, my phone rang. I said, "No, I'm not going to answer that. Oh, my God, who's that at 4 o'clock in the morning?" And then hung up and rang again. So I said, "Oh, that must be important because they rang again." So I picked up the receiver, and it was my dad in Greece calling me from Greece. He said, "Son, we are in Greece, and this ambassador gave us a visa, and we will be in Boston Logan Airport September 6, 1976. I sobered up. Alex, I sobered up.
Wow.
So that nice ambassador sent people to Lebanon, found my parents, thank God they were alive, put them on a ship and brought them to Greece, put them in a hotel, gave them a tourist visa, and sending them to me. So I went to the flower shop. I bought the biggest bouquet of flower that shop makes, and I sent it to them. And I couldn't send it enough to him, simply because I said, "I have God in heaven and you on earth. The fate of my family are in your hand."
So, Tony, I got to ask, have you ever been down? Have you ever been worried that something's not going to work?
No. Yeah. I never, ever, ever, ever was worried. Even when I did my escrow company and the crash of 2008 happened. You remember the crash? The
restate? I remember, yeah.
Okay, I wasn't getting any orders. But I paid my people for 6 months, so nobody left, so they can pay their mortgage and feed their family. I wasn't worried. I didn't get paid, but I paid them, and they stayed with me, and they're still with me now.
Now you have a mortgage company now? And
escrow company.
Escrow company. I'm sorry, escrow company. Escrow Quick, right?
ask real quick?
Yeah. Well, Tony, we've come to the end of our hour, but it has been a fascinating journey from Lebanon to Boston to Southern California. And it's been great having you on. If people are interested, again, your book will be out in the fall of 2018. They can also get in contact with you at tonyassali.com, TonyAssali.com. Or they can contact Luminary Leaders, luminaryleaders@gmail.com, because Tony also does speaking. If you'd like these stories, I could see a wide range of audiences who enjoy Tony's stories and how he's found the white tiger in a lot of places where it didn't look, you wouldn't think you could find it. So Tony, thanks for coming on. This has been a blast. And but I don't need to wish you luck because you make your own luck.
It's a pleasure, Alex. You are a great man. It's been an honor talking to you and having this nice interview with you. And I really one day would love to meet you in person and take you to lunch and get to know you more.
I'm going to take you up on that. And we'll find some white tigers.
Yes. I look forward to it.
Well, thanks for coming on, Tony. And thanks for the audience of Confident ROI for listening. And you can go to confidentroi.com to see the recent webinar but it'll be posted there on, depending on when you're listening to this, on Transform Your Company, the book. We're doing a webinar on that, as well as to sign up for the next issue of Confident ROI Magazine in print, digital, or audio format. Thanks for listening. And if you like this, please subscribe and leave a comment. Thank you very much.